to the Thursday, February 9th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from KTOO Studio in downtown Juno. We've got a very, very good show. We'll be talking to several people from UAS, from the School of Career Education, and also about a new play that, well, not a new play, a play that will be going on at UAS, the Vagina Monologues, this weekend, and then some folks who were visiting the Standing Rock Reservation recently. And then there will be Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up and Troy Quinn from the Juno Symphony. He's the music director. He's here in town to talk about this weekend's concerts. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Army Corps of Engineers on Wednesday granted an easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline to cross Lake Oahe in North Dakota, clearing the way for Energy Transfer partners to complete the more than 1,000-mile pipeline from North Dakota to Illinois. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has vowed to fight the pipeline in court. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe is also taking it to court. A temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction was filed today in federal court. Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier says it's illegal for the Trump administration to sidestep the administrative process, which was already underway, including terminating the environmental impact statement. Energy Transfer Partners reportedly resumed construction, which has been stalled for months, after receiving the easement approval on Wednesday. As tribes challenge the issue in court, demonstrators across the country are opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline with days of action this month. Native environmental groups, including Honor the Earth and the Indigenous Environmental Network, are among those helping organize events. On Wednesday, dozens of actions were scheduled in cities across the country, including one in Los Angeles, where demonstrators took to sidewalks holding no DAPL signs. Organizers are asking people to hold nonviolent events as protests are planned in a number of states. The Presbytery of Yukon in Alaska is holding a Renewal and Healing Week in Barrow, which included an apology Wednesday night. National church leaders voted in June that an apology was needed. Reverend Kirk Carnes delivered an apology at the Alaska Federation of Natives in Fairbanks in October. He says when missionaries came to the region, exploitation of land and exploitation of the original people who lived there took place. Carnes says they wanted to do good things, but they came with the assumption that being Christian meant becoming more European.
That's the kind of thing that leads to racist attitudes, that leads to cultural paternalism. That's the kind of thing that we're apologizing for. And there were specific things that happened in terms of teaching people that their culture, that their language was, they need to learn English, you can't speak your language. There was one missionary who went so far as to say that the native languages were so heathen you couldn't put Christian thought into it. That kind of thinking is so unchristian that we have to apologize for it.
Some Native people say the apology is a huge step toward healing and coming together to respect the integrity of Native cultures within the church. A fire near a First Nation village near British Columbia's Great Bear Rainforest has some people expressing anger and frustration. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, although the fire was eventually extinguished, members of the community had to do most of the firefighting themselves.
The fire broke out late on Friday, just before last weekend, across from Bella Bella. It was also in an area where there are several power lines. The chief of the Halsuk First Nation says band members kept trying to contact the Provincial Wildlife Services and the Provincial Emergency Preparedness Agency, as well as the company that operates the electricity lines. One of the power lines was damaged and the reserve lost its main source of power. Alia Brown of the Halsuk First Nation says the community was not getting the help it needed.
We're hoping that the province, you know, now that they're back at work, it's going to be more responsive, and we're really pushing that our main objective is that this fire be put out.
Officials with Borilex, the company that operates the power line, says the fire was put out by Monday and power to a damaged line was restored. The province's Wildlife Service says the fire was sparked when heavy winds during a storm brought down power lines, and those 50-mile-an-hour winds made it difficult to fight the fire. The chief, Marilyn Slett, said the community found itself in the frustrating position of not having the proper equipment, resources, and training to adequately respond. During the winter, British Columbia's Wildlife Service is not fully staffed, and an official says it's unreasonable to have crews on standby year-round. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board right now. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And our weather is glorious. It's 30 degrees outside and it is sunny. Our highs are going to be, they say 28, but it's 30 right now at the International Airport. And tonight, scattered snow showers after 1 a.m., increasing clouds with a low around 24. And then tomorrow starts a winter storm watch. We're looking at some serious snow from Friday into Saturday. And the chance of precipitation is a good old southeast, 100%. Here we go. New snow accumulation, 1 to 3 inches. And then Friday night, it will still be the same. Lots of snow going right into Saturday. So that's the weather update. We'll do that again at the end of the show. But let's get going. In the studio with us is Carrie White. She's here from the UAS School of Career Education. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So during the break, we were talking a little bit about what does the title career and the words career and technical education actually mean?
Well, actually, this month in February, we're celebrating that. And what that means to an average person, it's hands-on learning. Our classes are not necessarily for the four-year degree student. They're for all ages, high school up to any age. We offer power technology with heavy or marine emphasis. We have construction technology, and we have a health science program for the certified nursing assistants. And so all these classes focus on hands-on learning as well as some lecture time.
Okay. So career and technical education is not the four-year matriculated track. It's more of a course that when you're completed, you have a certification. It goes for a year or 2 years, and then there's individual courses as well.
Yes.
Great. So what's coming up in the spring?
Well, we have some great classes that you can register now for, and you can look at those classes online at our website, which is www.alaska.edu/career_ed. And what we have coming up is an introduction to drywall. So maybe that weekend warrior who wants to learn how to remodel a room in their house can learn the fundamentals of drywall and uses and fastening screws and adhesives. We also have a residential wiring class. This is a hands-on class for basic electrical requirements. One of the classes that I had taken myself was a certification for CPR and first aid, and that would be for anybody that needs that certification out in the community.
When is that class?
That class is on April 21st and April 22nd.
So it's a two-day class?
Yes, it's a two-day class, and it covers basic CPR techniques and first aid for controlling, you know, your bleeding, shock, whatever might come about in a situation, and you're a first responder. So
that sounds really interesting. And that's out at UAS?
It's at UAS across from Judo Douglas High School. We just have a newly, freshly painted building. It says UAS on it. We'd love to have people come in and stop by. You can call me anytime at 796-6128. Or 6120, and we would love to bring people in to tour the facilities to see the wonderful things that we have to offer there.
Oh, that sounds great. So, Carrie, so that CPR class is 2 days. The other ones you were talking about, the drywall and the wiring, how long are those classes?
Well, the drywall runs from March 21st through April 15th, and the wiring starts February 14th and runs through March 11th. And one class that is starting up soon, too, is Diesel Engine Simplified. So if you own a boat or a pickup or any type of diesel engine with other applications, that's a great class to take. So
that sounds great. Okay, and you can check it out all online, right?
At www.alaska.edu/career_in-ed. I also want to highlight one other class we have coming up, and that is beginning March 20th, and this is Building Construction 1. So it's focusing on exterior finishes. So if you want to learn how to do siding, roofing, doors, and window installation, this is a great class to take.
What a great community resource, really, all those classes. The CPR, so like anyone who's a Girl Scout or Boy Scout volunteer or you're a coach, you need those certifications.
Absolutely.
So you definitely need those. And then all those, what you called weekend warrior, wouldn't it be great to get a little knowledge? So maybe you wouldn't, you know, like everyone I know, when they're at tackling a home project, you think it's going to take X amount of time, and it usually takes, you know, anywhere from twice as much to maybe a little more. So these kind of classes can maybe really get the bang for your buck, you know, for your weekend warrior projects.
Absolutely. And one of the highlights I want to offer, too, on these classes, not only just the short courses that are coming up, but we have PowerTech classes that you can get a one-year occupational endorsement or a two-year associate's degree, and also in construction technology. So we also have this summer, the only summer class we offer at this building across from Juno Douglas High School, is the CNA program, the Certified Nursing Assistant. It's a 9-credit class. You walk out with your state certification after you take your test, and you are ready to enter the workforce.
And Alaska and the rest of the country need CNAs.
Yes,
ma'am. They definitely
do.
Well, thank you so much for coming by. Come by anytime. That sounds great. And if you need to check it out, you could go search it online for the Career and Tech School at UAS or give Carrie a buzz. That's great. And she's right here, right downtown.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I hope I can be on your show again.
Oh, anytime. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 9th of February, 2017. It was on this date in 1943 the Battle of Guadalcanal ended, which was the Allied forces' first major offensive against the Japanese in World War II. Guadalcanal in the Solomon Islands, about 90 miles long, 25 miles wide. The Japanese had taken it in June 1942, intending to build an airfield and from there launch long-range bombers. The Allied invaded on August 7, 1942, and took over the airfield. The Japanese launched a counterattack in November. It was a ferocious battle, heavy casualties on both sides. The American troops, eager but inexperienced, especially at night operations, so the Japanese planned attacks for the midnight hours. For every soldier who fell in battle, others fell to malaria or dysentery. After 6 months of major land battles, naval battles, air battles, the Japanese began to evacuate, and on February 9, 1943, the United States declared victory. The Japanese lost 25,000 troops and 6,300 U.S. Marines were killed. 1964, on this day, the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time, teenage girls screaming in the audience. 73 million people watched for Home. It was a record for American television at the time. It was on this day, 1870, the National Weather Service was established. At first it was called the Weather Bureau. It was part of the War Department. Then, 20 years later, it came under the Department of Agriculture, then to the Commerce Department in 1940. These days, the National Weather Service is based out of Silver Spring, Maryland. It's the birthday of Alice Walker, born in Eatonton, Georgia, 1944, the youngest of 8 children, daughter of poor sharecroppers, who graduated first in her high school class, won a scholarship to Spelman College in Atlanta, transferred to Sarah Lawrence, and met Langston Hughes, who became an early champion of her writing. Began to publish poetry in the late 1960s, and it was with her third novel, The Color Purple, in 1982, that she reached a much larger audience. It won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award in that year. And it's the birthday of the playwright and novelist Brendan Behan, born Dublin, 1923. His father took part in the Irish Rebellion of the early 20s. The father was in a British prison when the boy was born. By the time he was 16, Brendan Behan was being sent on missions to bomb British targets. He was thrown in jail for carrying a suitcase full of homemade explosives through the streets of Liverpool. And while in prison, he began to write. He wrote his first play, The Quair Fellow, and then the novel Borstal Boy and The Hostage, in which he wrote, "Never throw stones at your mother, you'll be sorry for it when she's dead. Never throw stones at your mother, throw bricks at your father instead." Here's a poem by Kay Ryan, If the Moon Happened Once. If the moon happened once, it wouldn't matter much, would it? One evening's ticket punched with a round or a crescent. You could like it or not like it as you chose. It couldn't alter every time it rose. It couldn't do those things with scarves. It does. Kay Ryan's poem, If the Moon Happened Once, from The Best of It, published by Grove Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes store, or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 17 minutes past the hour. You're listening to us live from KTOO Studios in Alaska's beautiful capital city. And our next guest, we have Troy Quinn with the Juno Symphony, who comes up on a regular basis from Los Angeles to lead our musicians in beautiful concerts, and Jeff Carlson, who is up from Ketchikan, and he is the trumpet soloist in this weekend's, and as usual, I understand, concert. So welcome to the show, guys.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
Pleasure. Right. Absolutely.
So it's entitled American Roots.
That's right.
And it happens Saturday at 8 at the high school, Juno Douglas High School.
Correct.
And then again Sunday at 3.
You've got two chances to see this wonderful show.
And 68 musicians.
Yep, got a big orchestra of all of your favorites. So this program is so special because we have something for everybody's taste on it. You know, we've got classical music, Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, so many people know, Barber's Adagio for Strings, a heart-wrenching piece that's also been in films. And then we have some film music, too. Jeff's going to be playing the trumpet solo on John Williams' film From Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, that came out a few years ago. So we have a fantastic show and audience interaction at the end. We're actually going to have the audience sing along with us on a wonderful arrangement of America the Beautiful. So it's going to be a patriotic, feel-good concert for everyone.
Oh, that sounds great. So when you talk about American Roots, it's entitled American Roots. What does that mean for music?
Well, basically, this is the music of our nation. And we're so young, obviously, as a nation. We have such an eclectic, vast array of music. So on this program, I try to put everything from jazz, light, popular, classics, to film music, which is certainly an art form that was developed here, as well as American classical composers, Barber, Cowell, Ives, some of these musicians, you know, that really celebrate our own music. So it's not only popular, but classical. And a lot of this stuff, some of the pieces actually were written for the Boston Pops and Arthur Fiedler in the 50s. There's this wonderful piece that we're doing, Bugler's Holiday, which most of your listeners will be familiar with that as a three-trumpet solo, but we're using three trombones on it, showcasing our wonderful local section And certainly that was played in at the Boston Pops. And so a lot of this sort of lighter fare that describes our vast nature as Americans. And I think it's a great representation.
That sounds great. And Jeff, as the trumpet soloist coming up from Ketchikan, what's it like to play with the symphony up here?
Oh, it's a breath of fresh air for me. I studied music. I got a master's degree from Manhattan School of Music. I was there just a couple of years after Troy was, actually.
Right, yeah.
And so, but my born and raised in Ketchikan, I really missed home. Ended up coming back here. And, you know, in Alaska, it's harder to make a living at music. So, you know, I fill in my time with day jobs, but I get my musical outlet here in Juneau to play with the wonderful symphonic repertoire that I miss so much about my studies.
Well, it's amazing who comes through the studio here.
Right? We have such a vast array of talented people here in Alaska, you know, and that's the other great thing about the symphony. It allows it allows the community to see these wonderful, talented people in Southeast and beyond.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also said that when we were during the break, you mentioned that you're pairing Juno photos with pieces?
We are, yeah. We have a special sort of concert set up this cycle where we have collected local Juno photos from wonderful amateur and professional photographers here in town, and we will be pairing that and showing that as a slideshow during some selections of the concert, so particularly on the opening Fanfare for the Common Man by Copland, and on our closing, America the Beautiful. So we had many submissions, some wonderful photos here from Juno, and folks get a ticket to go see their picture and see if it was submitted into the slideshow. So you'll really get an interdisciplinary visual and musical experience, and I think it's going to be quite powerful, especially with the orchestra playing this wonderful music, and, you know, getting to see our wonderful community here. Can't beat that.
That sounds great. So that sounds wonderful, a great pairing of the American roots music with Juno roots.
Right, exactly.
Visual Juno roots, which
right.
Sounds great. All right, well, anything else you guys want to – let's talk about the logistics one more time.
Sure. I think people still can get tickets, and they range from $17 up to $32, I believe. They're at all the local usual outlets at Hearthside, at the Jack. You can also buy them at the door. Or if you go on our website, junosymphony.org, you can – click and buy them there. There are still some, but please come. I know Wearable Art is happening at this weekend as well, but you can come Saturday and then go to that on Sunday, 8 o'clock on Saturday and 3 p.m. on Sunday at JDHS. You're not going to want to miss it, so stop by and say hello and see all the wonderful things that are happening with the symphony.
That sounds great. Thank you both for coming in today.
Appreciate it.
Our
all
pleasure.
Right. And go to the symphony. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. I'm here to encourage you to take part in Juno's community-wide 17YOK initiative by doing one kind act each day and once a week directing a kind act towards someone outside your normal circle. You can get more information on the Year of Kindness by visiting the Juno Police Department's Facebook page. Together, we make Juno a better place to live.
Tobacco smoke impacts a child's developing brain. When removed from the smoking environment, a child can experience withdrawal symptoms. This includes irritability, anxiety, and difficulty learning. Protect your child's health. Protect your health. Start today by planning to quit. Call or enroll online for free support from Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and SEARCH.
Thank you.
It is 25 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from KTO's studios in Alaska's capital city. Right now it's 30 degrees. We've got a winter storm watch going into effect tomorrow at noon for 24 hours. We're supposed to get a pretty good, decent dump of snow. So that's good news for our skiers. And off we are with our next guest. In the studio, we have M. Rademacher from UAS. She's a resident life coordinator. We have Britta Tonneson from AWARE, and they're here to talk about this joint venture of presenting the play, The Vagina Monologues, at the university tomorrow night. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hi, thanks so much.
So let's talk about the logistics first, where it's going to be, right. And then we'll talk about all the different producing partners and why it's being put on, and maybe a little bit about the play for people who are not familiar with it.
Absolutely. So V-Day, UAS, and Juno is going to present The Vagina Monologues tomorrow, Friday, February 10th at 7 p.m., and it's a benefit production of Eve Ensler's famous play, a collection of stories, both dramatic and funny, showing all the various sides and narratives of different women that were interviewed about 20 years ago, who have wonderful, wonderful stories to tell. And it's a great, really great journey to take a look into the life of women, both in the U.S. and around the world. So tickets are available at the door, $5 for UAS students, faculty, and staff, and $10 for community members. All the proceeds go to benefit Juno's local organization, AWARE.
Okay. You said V-Day.
Yeah. V-Day is the organization which sponsors the rights to The Vagina Monologues. And every year, they work with organizations around the world to help produce these benefit productions of both The Vagina Monologues and other artistic works of art, so other dramatic pieces or art shows, showcases, and whatnot, and all in the hope of working to end violence against women and girls around the world.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because for listeners who are not aware of it, when you put on a play, you have to buy the rights to that play, the rights to perform it, and it can get pretty costly.
Exactly.
So that's wonderful. So let's turn a little bit to Britta, who's here from AWARE. Let's talk a little bit about AWARE and what AWARE does in the community.
Oh, thanks for this opportunity. AWARE is really honored to be receiving these funds. That goes towards all the programs we do. A lot of us know AWARE as the AWARE shelter, and we really want to break down that limiting factor because AWARE does quite a bit more than the shelter. We have the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition, which is composed of three subcommittees engaging boys and men. And within that, there's an entire programming, comprehensive programming of things like coaching boys into men, boys run, the batter intervention program, JCAP, the Juno Choice and Accountability Program. Also within the coalition is youth engagement. So the programs like Girls on the Run that you might have heard of, Lead On. What else do we have? We have the teen council, things like that. And then there's equity. So we'll be doing some equity talks. The familiar things people might be aware of are HEART, which is our hospital emergency assault response team. And it's kind of an amplified version of SART, sexual assault response team. So we respond to domestic violence and sexual assault calls in the emergency room for anyone. That could be men, women, the LGBTQI community. We serve everyone who is surviving sexual assault or domestic violence.
Okay. All right. So quite a wide array of services.
Yeah.
What's the number if people want to ask some questions about AWARE services?
586-6623 is our main line. It's all free and confidential.
Okay, that's great. All right, let's go back to the play. All right. So the Vagina Monologues. So for people who are not familiar with the play, you want to talk a little bit about it as far as you talked that it's different vignettes.
Sure.
How many actors do you have in it? Who's directing it?
Sure. We have about 11 cast members that range from community members, people from AWARE, students from the UAS community, and staff as well. This will be the 19th year that V-Day has helped produce the Vagina Monologues around the world. And I first saw the production probably about 10 years ago when I was in my undergrad and was able to perform one of the shorter pieces, which was in the style of poetry. And it's reclaiming a word that I'm not going to say, but that can be very pejorative for women. And this particular monologue is all about saying, no, you're not going to use it against me. I'm going to take back that word. And I think a lot of the monologues have that spirit, that this experience happened to me and it is a part of my life, but it's also going to inspire me to move forward and to be an incredible woman and to not be ashamed for the body that I have, but to reclaim it.
Right. Yeah. Sounds great.
Yeah.
So 11 women.
11 women. There's about 17 different stories. I will say that the content of the production does cover some mature topics regarding sexual violence and sexual identity and exploration. Any age is welcome to attend, but parents may wish to know that before they bring young children.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then you talked a little bit before that Title IX is involved with this?
Yes.
So can we talk a little bit about what that means?
Absolutely. So our Office of Title IX, which is a requirement for university campuses, responds to investigates reports of sexual assault from UAS students, faculty, and staff.
It's a federal mandate.
It's
right?
A federal mandate, mm-hmm. Yep. And they work with the Office of Civil Rights, and I think are an incredible component of our university administration, which essentially is an advocate for making sure that we have safe campuses, not just for women and girls, but across the board.
For everybody.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in. One more time, let's talk about where the play is and when.
Yep. So it'll be on the UAS campus at the Egan Lecture Hall. That's room 112 tomorrow, Friday, February 10th at 7 p.m. The doors open at 6:45, and I recommend people get there early to get their tickets. $5 for UAS students, faculty, and staff, and $10 for community members.
Great. And all the proceeds go to AWARE.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. Some birds require habitats created by other animals. Two such landscape shapers were the American bison and the prairie dog. For thousands of years, these animals generated a mosaic of vegetation on the Great Plains, ranging from nearly bare earth in bison wallows and prairie dog towns to lightly grazed tall grasslands. Each benefited particular species of birds. With the extermination of millions of bison and prairie dogs, species such as burrowing owls that require barren ground greatly declined. The cattle that replaced the bison and prairie dogs are also ecosystem engineers, but cattle, constrained by fences, graze nearly all areas quite heavily. Birds adapted to this degree of grazing live sustainably with cattle. But birds which prefer ungrazed or lightly grazed vegetation have become rare, such as chestnut-collared longspurs. The American Prairie Foundation is restoring a rich and varied prairie in northeastern Montana. They're removing fences and reintroducing bison to lands they've not occupied for more than a century. Prairie dog colonies are also expanding. Ecosystems are resilient. By working with natural processes and employing the services of nature's ecosystem engineers, we can restore both birds and some of the lost grandeur of America's Serengeti. There's more to this story at birdnote.org.
Thank you. It is 24 minutes to the hour. It's Thursday, February 9th, still. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city and the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm your Thursday host, Joan Pardis. And in the studio with us right now are some ladies from Fairbanks, Ine Begay and Jessica Girard. And they're here because they are chatting tonight at UAS other people who attended Standing Rock, these two were there as well, to talk about what happened and where do you go from here. So tonight, 5:30, UAS, Egan Hall, room 112. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thanks.
Thank
well,
you.
Happiness.
Welcome to Juno. So we want to hear about it. So when did you go? What did you see? What was it like?
Yeah, so we took a delegation of about 12 Alaskan women down to Standing Rock a few months ago, and I know that there's been a number of people from the Ketchikan area and from Juneau, from this area, Tlingit people that went down to Standing Rock in support as well. And we spent, some of us a couple weeks, some of us longer down there, we took supplies from the Fairbanks area and donations that we got from pretty much around the state. We took our prayers down. We had grandmothers, elders and people from across the state. We had an elder from Barrow with us, from Savunga, so from various different villages throughout Alaska. And all of us had been in prayer, in solidarity with the Standing Rock tribe for months. And then after we saw the militarized police force coming in on people who were in prayer, we said we have to take these supplies down, we have to take our prayers down, and we have to be in solidarity. And so that's what we did.
And what was it like?
It was, I'm a veteran myself, so it was kind of like going to one of the camps that I was at when I was in Iraq. There was on the outskirts, it was very militarized. There were snipers pointed at you, for instance, from hills that are known to be sacred sites to the Sioux. There were camps with peaceful prayer happening inside them, which was very emotional for all of us there. So it was almost like you were sitting in prayer in this huge camp, and you were surrounded by military. There was a plane flying over us all the time to mess with our phones so that we couldn't use our phones. There were nighttime announcements telling us where we could and couldn't be. But in the midst of all that was this energy of collaboration and prayer and hope and learning. And so it was this mixed bag of the very militarized police and in the same system and the same place, a spirit of learning and bringing that learning out into your own communities.
Wow. Well, let's start at the beginning, okay? Let's say someone who's listening is not aware of what happened. So can we succinctly paint the picture of what happened, then what transpired, and then what now is happening?
Sure. Yeah, well, in the very, trying to be succinct, I guess, energy.
It's a complex issue.
It is a complex issue. We could go as far back as the history of this country and talking about the colonial practices and tribal land sovereignty issues, which are very much at play. But in the just the nuts and bolts of what's happening in North Dakota, Energy Transfer Partners is a pipeline company that's trying to build a pipeline from North Dakota carrying crude oil to refineries. They initially wanted to build a pipeline north of Bismarck, which is a predominantly white community, I think 90% white, and that community said, no, we don't want the pipeline going north of our community because if it breaks into our water, and since we're south, all of our water is going to be polluted. So without adequate consultation to the tribal government, that pipeline was rerouted south of the Bismarck, North Dakota, and just north of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, which is a contested territorial land
land that was not ceded to and is still actually treaty land to the Standing Rock Sioux. And so without consultation, that pipeline was rerouted just north of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has been continuously in opposition to it. And the governor of North Dakota issued a state of emergency back in October or sometime, no, back
in
October,
the fall, so, yeah.
In the fall. And because of that, he was able to get a lot of extra money to militarize his police force, and so there's a lot of tanks and riot police came in, and basically they blockaded the main road. The police blockaded the main road that was the most direct access for the tribal people and everyone who lives there, whether a tribe or not.
I have a question. I have lots of questions, but I'm going to stick to. We don't have a tremendous amount of time, by which we did. So the governor of North Dakota called in the police, but where were the protests? Were the protests on Sioux land?
There were, there was a lot of people practicing nonviolent civil disobedience. So there was people praying to where the construction was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So where they're building the pipeline is on contested tribal land, which is on unceded tribal land. However, it's technically currently known as Army Corps of Engineering land, or they have the permit rights for building the pipeline under the river. So a number of people, prayerful people, water protectors, locked themselves to equipment to stop this, to slow down this process, because the full process, they've never even done a full environmental impact statement.
No EIS.
There was no EIS done. They bulldozed right through sacred burial sites. So it was very disrespectful to the tribe, and they weren't listening to the tribe. And so people went and practiced, put their bodies in the way. And so without weapons, without, you know, resisting arrest other than locking down, I suppose, that practice of freedom of speech and a practice that I think has been practiced throughout our history to change unjust laws, particularly during the civil rights movement, caused the governor to issue a statement of emergency for North Dakota. So when we got there, there were a lot of tanks. Right before we got there in October, the police had arrested over 200 people in one day, mm-hmm. who were in prayer. They came into a camp and they took elders out of ceremony sweats, and they were throwing people on the ground, and they arrested over 200 people in one day. So many people they had to put them in dog kennels for hours. Elders, people that I have a lot of respect for, who are not, you know, crazy radical. Violent people. These are grandmas. A grandma that I know very well was arrested that day. And they had these sound cannon things. They're kind of military vehicles that they can shoot at crowds to mess with their, I don't know, chemical makeup. I don't know. I'm not versed in the military equipment. That, of course, has had, I think, a big impact on a lot of people throughout the country who have seen this. There's a lot of this video that's on TV, on the Internet. I mean, a lot of reporters were being arrested unjustly. I mean, people who were trying to tell the story were being arrested. So there's a lot of just a flagrant
disregard for civil liberty.
Thank you.
I was just a guess. I wasn't there. So if you're just joining us, Ine Begay and Jessica Girard are here. They're down from Fairbanks. This fall, they were at Standing Rock. And tonight, they are joining other people who are at Standing Rock, as well as an audience, to talk about what happened and where to go from here. And they are meeting at UAS 530, Egan Room 112. Well, thank you for going down and representing, being part of the representation to Alaska.
Could I say, and really quickly, to sum up where we are at this moment.
That would be great.
The Army Corps had initiated a process of doing a full environmental impact statement, and that process was supposed to be getting public comment until February 20th. However, with our new president, he issued an executive order saying wanting to get this done quickly, and so that EIS process was circumvented, and he has signed off on the Army Corps' permit instead of the Army Corps. And so they, from what we know, they have been able to continue now building the pipeline as of today. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has taken legal action. So this is a very heated issue, particularly in North Dakota. But I think that there are things that we can do all over the country. One of the big things that has been very impactful is directing our attention at the funders, the investors in the energy transfer partners. And so a couple of banks have taken their money out of supporting energy transfer partners. A bank that's up here, Wells Fargo, is another one that many people are pressuring. In fact, the city of Seattle took their entire investments out of Wells Fargo as a push to stop the pipeline.
So for our listeners and myself, is there, besides the many news outlets that are covering this, is there a site that you recommend that people go? Because, you know, the issue was supposedly, quote unquote, over. It's obviously not over in any way, shape, or form. Is there a site that you could suggest that we go and check it out and see how we could help if people are interested in helping?
The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has a website, and it's easy to Google, as well as Lakota People's Power Project, or Lakota People's Law Project. Sorry.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, and if people don't want to divest from Wells Fargo, they can invest in lawyers' fees and other fees that run along with the arrest. And also there's a sustainable plan for the Sioux Tribe land, and there's investment potential there as well.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish we had more time to do an in-depth study. Jessica is a Iraq veteran. Thank you for your service. And Ine Bagai down from Fairbanks. So thank you very, very much for coming by today.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back.
The Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum is a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting the goals and activities of the Juno Douglas City Museum. Invest in your community art and history with your 2017 membership. Learn more at junomuseumfriends.org. Admission to the City Museum is free through April, courtesy of community sponsors. This message brought to you by Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum.
Listening to Juno Afternoon, Nancy DeCherney, the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, is here. And it is Wearable Arts Weekend here in Juno. So you and your staff, you're drinking bonbons. You're drinking lattes over there.
Each of us are getting our
eating bonbons.
Yeah.
You know,
like
getting
around.
A tan.
That's right. It's sunny and lovely. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about wearable arts. First of all, when is it?
It is Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Saturday night, doors open at 7, shows at 8. And if you didn't get tickets because they were sold out, we're doing a live stream over at the Hangar Ballroom, and they're offering complimentary appetizers, and the after party will go there. And I sort of feel like, you know, if you're one of those people that doesn't really like a big crowd of a whole bunch of people, it could be that the Hangar Ballroom's a nice, pleasant, comfortable, lovely place to be.
You are always shaking it up. I'll tell you, you're always shaking it up over there.
Technology.
And you're serving food this year, too. Right?
Well, V's will have some little, like those little things that you buy on the airplane, you know,
little wearable art survivor kit.
Yes, that'll be available.
So are Saturday and Sunday sold out?
Yes, that is the case. there's probably going to be seats available at the door. That's just a question of whether you feel more comfortable coming to the door and standing in line and waiting until the very end. Okay. So
how many years has wearable arts been happening here in Juneau?
Now, this is a very good question because I can't really remember. My memory's fogged. But I have notes going back to 2001. What I don't recall is if they actually did a performance in 2001, and it would have been at the old Elks Hall, which is now the Rockwell,
mm-hmm.
Or whether that's just when they started the planning and 2002 was when the first one actually happened.
Oh, okay. 2002 started at the Rockwell, and now it's Centennial Hall.
Yeah,
standing room only with a satellite location in Bangor Ballroom.
Yes.
And how many entries this year?
We had quite a few entries, 30-some odd, but there will be 29 of them on the runway. Things happen, like people just overestimate the amount of time they have, or things happen in their life. So we have 29 rock-solid, excellent exhibits coming.
You mean making art that you wear or a model wears would take time?
I know. Isn't that surprising?
All right, let's talk about the range of materials that have been used for costumes either this year or in the past. We know wood, right?
Dave's goodness, pieces right. are amazing, of course. And he's actually back. So he's going to be one of the jurors. We're going to we have the exhibit jurored. So there's wood. There's been bullet casings. There's been hoochies. There's been tampons. There's always some candy wrappers. There's just shower curtains. CDs. That was a beautiful fish. Of course, there's balloons. And it's just people's imaginations just run wild. That's all I have to say about that.
It's pretty phenomenal. When you said all that material, I know. Exactly what she's talking about.
There was like all of Lisa Murkowski's campaign banners one time. You know, shout out to Lisa. So
and then there was film canisters, all different
types
of things.
Yes, yes, yes. All kinds of
stuff. So do you have a favorite costume of all time, and would you divulge it?
You know, I really feel like all of them are very, very special, and I guess maybe the one that I found the most moving was one of Davies, the Beast and the Beauty. I found that one very touching. But, you know, some of them are just funny, and some of them are just amazing. They're always wonderful. There's not a clinker in the bunch.
Yeah, I agree. And so we've talked a little bit about how this show has changed since since the first time. Now you've got a satellite location, you know, runway lights. Yeah, I mean, it just is quite a full
production.
For you, what is the most marked change over the time?
Well, I started, this is my 11th one. And
she's still smiling.
I would say the production quality just keeps getting higher and higher and higher. And I think maybe there was a moment there, a couple of moments where Patricia Hall was the director, and she just had these visions of video and all kinds of things. And it's just kind of taken off since then. Bauer and Clifton, once they moved it over to Centennial Hall, the production quality just went off the charts, I think. So that's the part that's the biggest change for me, I think, is the, you know, we used to move into Centennial Hall on Friday night and then have the show on Saturday. Now we move in on Wednesday, and we're over there Wednesday and Thursday and Friday setting up, and we do a tech run on Friday. This is the second year we're doing a tech run. And then on Saturday, there's a dress rehearsal and then the shows. So it's a lot of, you know, the models have been all working. We used to just do, I think, 6 rehearsals with them. Now they get like 12 or something like that. They have been working and working on things. So every year we think of something, oh, gosh, we should try that. So next year we have a few changes already that we're going to make. It's an amazing collaboration of a lot of very creative and wonderful people.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That's great. And are most of the entries local?
Yes. Every so often we try to get the Ketchikan ones to come up or ours to go. Like Dave used to take his to Ketchikan, but the transportation is difficult. We may be able to do it next year because wearable art is going to be 1 week later than normal. So we'll probably be able to get some Ketchikan folks up.
Okay, and then we just have a few more minutes. So my last question is about Wearable Arts, which is the big fundraiser for the Jack.
It is. Correct? It's our major one. Yeah. Absolutely.
So tell me three things that people should be really excited about this year.
We're going to do a live auction from the stage of two amazing things. George Gress has donated one of his fabulous guitars. It's dyed with blueberries, and a new company called Adventure Flow has donated this trip to Tracy Arm, so that there'll be a live auction happening on Saturday night, which has never happened before. I think, I can't think of three things. Everything's going to be exciting and fun. You should,
food is new.
And yeah, there's just going to be all kinds of stuff going on. I can't.
It gets better and better.
Who knows? Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you and your staff for putting on a great show.
And don't forget the symphony is going. And
Trey
don't forget.
Don't
forget that there's also still an opportunity to see They Don't Talk Back. I want to really encourage that.
They're a local playwright.
Yes, and a really phenomenal piece of work. So
sounds great.
And by the way, the playwright is the MC for Wearable Art. So
club right there.
Sounds
great. All right. Well, thank you, Nancy,
sure,
for all that you
we'll
do
see
you to
somewhere
keep our arts and culture in the capital city vibrant.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. Okay, here we are. We are 2 minutes to the hour. We're going to wrap up. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. A really interesting show, Jeff. Thanks for putting it together. So tonight, high near 28. Tomorrow, high near 30. Winter Storm Watch goes into effect tomorrow at noon. We're looking at a lot of snow. Precipitation is 100%. They're saying anywhere from 5 to 10 inches. Oh, please make it so. And then Saturday, we're looking at rain and snow. Thank you for joining us.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3.